This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Gertrude Wheel spent her life fighting for civil rights in the South. She founded the state's League of Women Voters and campaigned against lynching and segregation in North Carolina. She cleverly navigated the fault lines that marked politics in this state in the early 20th century. In the book Gertrude Wheel, Jewish Progressive in the New South, historian Leonard Rogoff exposes the roots of Gertrude Wheel's activism and talks about her legacy in North Carolina and beyond. Leonard Rogoff is a historian for the Jewish Heritage Foundation of North Carolina and returns to our program. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Well, it's good to have you again, and this is an amazing story. Again, embarrassingly, one of those stories we know so little about. Thank you for telling it. Gertrude's story, you were doing some research at the Jewish Heritage Foundation. Tell us how you found out about her.
Well, as you mentioned, I was doing a history of the Jews of North Carolina, and of course came across her name quite early on in my research. And it wasn't only her accomplishments as I read about her, but there was something about her character that was entirely charming. And I suppose one doesn't undertake a multi-year project of writing a biography without in some sense falling in love with your subject. And
well, tell us what there is to love about her. Maybe we should go back a step and find out about her family in Goldsboro.
Well, her grandparents and her father were antebellum German-Jewish immigrants to North Carolina, part of a great wave of European immigration to the United States. They began that kind of classical journey, starting out as peddlers and clerks and then storekeepers, and they were extremely successful. They were much admired not only for their entrepreneurship, but also for their civic enterprise in terms of being benefactors to the community and upright citizens.
And as you say, it did not take them long to develop a good name. This says something about it. Maybe we can take even one more step back about Jews in North Carolina. As compared to other places in the South, it was a somewhat different experience, and the kind of discrimination that Jews would have experienced here was somewhat different than other places in the South or not?
Well, I like to think of it in terms of an even larger context. I know today we talk about the global South and our sudden multicultural society, but if you look back at even a place like Goldsboro, at the time, especially after the Civil War, you'll see that it was developing. There were German immigrants, Irish immigrants. There were immigration societies trying to cultivate, to bring more immigrants. Part of the purpose for that was not a benevolent one. They wanted to ensure white racial supremacy. But certainly by the beginning of the 20th century, you had Syrians and Lebanese and East European Jews arriving. So these were very diverse places, and the immigrants contributed to the upbuilding of these communities.
So tell us about her family's participation in civic life in Goldsboro.
Well, her family background was again, her mother was actually born in Raleigh. And the families had settled, her extended family, Ettingers, Rosenthals, Wheels, had settled in small towns all across eastern North Carolina. And her grandmother was known as one of the three graces or three angels of Wilson, along with woman Mary Daniels, whose son was Josephus Daniels, and a Mrs. Connor. It was a Catholic Jewish Methodist Trinity. So she was raised in an environment of benevolence.
What were these angels doing? Why were they angels?
Well, they were feeding the poor. They were clothing the naked.
So a lot of charity
doing all the
and
things.
They had a name for this kind of, you know, they had developed a name. Or
well,
reputation.
As the historian Anne Fuhr Scott says, the progressive movement, virtually all these women's had their origins in church benevolence societies and religious benevolence societies. And this was a multi-religious interfaith council
throughout,
as we have today.
Throughout the book, you refer to Gertrude as a new woman. Tell us what you mean.
Well, the new woman was actually a technical term, a label applied early in the 20th century. for women who are stepping out of the home and hearth and entering the civic marketplace. They were becoming educated. They were insisting upon their women's rights, legal protections, legal equality. The suffrage movement was certainly a focus of the new women. And of course, this was going to upset the whole social hierarchy, which was based upon male dominance.
This is unsafe ground for women all over the United States at this point to be agitating for the vote. Was it particularly difficult or particularly dangerous for a Jewish woman in the South in that period?
Well, the Jewish aspect of it was really not relevant. In contrast to Britain, where Jewish women had to form their own suffrage organization, they were very well integrated into the suffrage movement in the United States at virtually all levels. So there was certainly, she certainly received this one letter that I quote in the book, which is almost comically funny about a resident of Wayne County expressing surprise that a descendant of God's chosen would want to be involved in a movement of suffrage. But it was not really, I think, the germane issue. Yeah.
And
for her.
And more than just involved, I mean, she was a real leader. She organized the League of Women Voters in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, and I think what it really shows about it was her comfort level. Usually, the way they describe Southern Jews is that they want to fit in, that they were told not to make waves, not to stand out. But obviously, she had sufficient social and political comfort to be able to take a controversial position.
And a real social intelligence in reading your book, you get to understand how she was able to use charm, wit, intelligence in order to really navigate these difficult waters.
Well, Christian women at the time were raised in the environment of the social gospel. So she came out of a Jewish home that was infused with what's called classical Reform Judaism. So she was raised in this in an environment and ambience of benevolence, of charity, of ethical conduct. But she was also the first North Carolinian to graduate from Smith College. And it was there that I think she really received a kind of ideological education. You know, they read Marx, they read Engels, Jacob Riis, Jane Addams. So when she returned to Goldsboro, she was not only, as I mentioned, was she a new woman holding progressive views, but she was also a traditional Southern lady because the foundations of her progressive views really traced to her religious and spiritual foundations.
She organized, again, the suffrage movement was ultimately successful. There were some Southern states that approved the amendment allowing the women the right to vote, but not North Carolina, sadly.
North Carolina, again, was its usual dilatory self, and and Gertrude lost the battle, but they won the war. And North Carolina, as Gertrude wrote, the eyes of the nation were on North Carolina because 36 states needed to ratify the 19th Amendment, and it had come down, 35 had ratified, and it had come down to two, Tennessee or North Carolina, and they were both considering the amendment at the same time. And it was, I think it's probably the most dramatic chapter in my book. And I guess, spoiler alert.
Tennessee wins. Right. Tennessee beats North Carolina. Right. That headline would send a wave of panic through almost anybody, even today.
Right.
But it is a remarkable story, and she stays with it. It's not the kind of defeat that knocks her out. I mean, she stays with these social causes. She doesn't, by no means, discourages her.
No, it doesn't discourage her, but I think it gave her a very realistic lesson in terms of the political possibilities of being a progressive in a conservative state.
Now, she always so the women's right to vote and the suffrage movement, but also very active in civil rights in North Carolina and trying to end segregation.
Yes, I think it's a cause that she came to very early on in her career. She had contributed to what was Black Uplift, which was a kind of paternalistic way of, you know, contributing to Black charities, supporting Black schools, serving on the Commission for Interracial Cooperation. And most of that was research, talk, conversation, dialogue. And by the 1940s, she had moved to a fully integrationist position.
And oddly enough, and I think this does shine a light on the times, too, and some of the complexity of what it meant to be progressive in that era. She was also a proponent of eugenics.
Yes, and the eugenics was a progressive position
at the time.
And I was surprised to learn that initially it did not have a pronounced racial component to it, and that really the emphasis of targeting the African-American population really came with the rise of the civil rights movement and the assertion of Black rights.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And again, I think that this shines a light on the fact that what we now consider, you know, totally racialized was not. And in fact, as you say, was a progressive idea, whether you like it or not.
And supported by people like the Chief Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes and Louis Brandeis and a lot of the progressives of the time, George Bernard Shaw.
So involved in a lot of things. We're talking about, again, women's rights, the suffrage movement, desegregation, and also she becomes increasingly aware of what's going on in Europe in the 1930s and aware of the dangers facing her family in Europe.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, she always referred to what is called our crowd. And the migration from Europe to America did not break the bonds of family and kinship, and they kept warmly in touch with each other. They visited Germany, and their German relatives had come to the United States, and her European family had made the migration, the other Jews had, from the German countryside into the cities, and they were now in London, Paris, Frankfurt, so they knew the family well. And then when Hitler arose, everything collapsed for them, and they were desperate to get out and needed American sponsors.
And so she sponsored a number of her family?
She rescued about a dozen members of her family, was unsuccessful with several of them. But in the state archives are all the letters, these just very moving letters of her German family who are stranded in Vienna or stranded in North Africa, desperate to get out, fearing that they're in internment camps, fearing that they're going to be returned to Nazi-occupied Europe, knowing what fate awaits them. And also you understand the accusations directed against the United States and also Britain for closing their doors and putting administrative obstacles to prevent the migration of endangered Jews to America.
Yeah, this is the story we don't tell ourselves. We say that we fought World War II in part to save the Jews, but we in no way had any part of that and closed our doors at a time when it would have been vital because we didn't want refugees into our country, to allow refugees in the country. So again, you know, thank you for reminding us that the story we tell didn't go back far enough, because if we go back far enough, we find a nation that that really had an inexcusable policy of exclusion. But tell us how she rescued them. I think that's an interesting story.
First of all, she needed to get documentation attesting to her. I think there were 13 forms that she had to fill out. She had to put up bonds for them, totaling into the thousands. One cousin that she was especially close to, whose letters are fascinating because he's extremely well-educated and erudite, and he and his wife flee to Paris and then to Vichy, France, to the south of France, and then they're not heard from again for 4 or 5 years. Gertrude's efforts include traveling to Washington to get visas for them, but they get trapped in Nazi-occupied Europe. And then all of a sudden, one day they show up in Queens, New York. So That was one of her more successful.
So she letters. She didn't just send a letter to the Holocaust Center.
No, not.
Would have been an easy way, wouldn't it?
Yeah, not to the Holocaust Center.
Forgive me. I'm still trying to process that one, and here you are.
Right.
Also very active in the labor movement.
Yes, I mean, from the very beginning. I mean, even before World War I, she was speaking out against the exploitation of child labor in the textile mills, against trying to get reduced hours and better working conditions for women. And she worked very closely with people like Frank Graham. They formed a kind of mutual admiration society in trying to push for labor legislation. And North Carolina, as you well know, I guess to this day, was extremely resistant to unionization. And it wasn't really onto the New Deal that reduced work hours and protection for children and women.
She obviously always wasn't successful in her crusades, but I wonder to what extent that she received real pushback or, you know, became, you know, was this ever a kind of a threat, or did she ever find herself in a dangerous situation because of her outspoken nature and ability?
Well, certainly there were things like the Southern Textile Bulletin that were, you know, alleging Bolshevism, and people really found themselves under attack. And Gertrude herself had a quality about her. She was a short woman, diminutive. She had always looked younger than her years, and she had a sparkle in her eyes. And she was always a Southern lady. And she had a way of charming even those who opposed her. And she was a very, very difficult woman to hate. I mean, her innate kindness, her charm, her wit, she had a very quick laugh, I think disarmed her opponents. But certainly, you know, in the civil rights days, I mean, she was working in Klan country in eastern North Carolina. And dynamite was planted at synagogues in Charlotte and Gastonia. Other Jews like Harry Golden, for example, received death threats. Yeah. But that didn't dissuade her, and she seemed not to have been attacked.
Not at all. She led a delegation of, well, tell us, there's a couple of incidents, I think, beginning with trying to desegregate a hotel lobby.
Well, she received an invitation from a Democratic gubernatorial candidate to, quote, bring your friends and neighbors to a rally at a hotel which was segregated. And Gertrude, she actually died in the home in which she was born, lived in a neighborhood that had been changing. So she marched into this political reception, leading her neighbors, who happened to be African-American. And as she put it, when people asked her what she was doing, you know, she said, well, you said to bring my friends and neighbors, and we had a lovely time.
She also built a swimming pool.
Well, that's another story. Wayne County apparently had enough money to build two pools in white neighborhoods, but not enough for the African neighborhood. So the Wheel family donated land that they owned in a black neighborhood in Goldsboro and built the swimming pool. At its dedication on a warm summer day, Miss Gertrude showed up in an overcoat. And at the moment of its dedication, removed the coat and was wearing an old-fashioned swimsuit as she was in her 80s at this point, and dove into the pool head first, inviting the children to come in after her.
Thus desegregating the pool.
That's the way that was Miss Gertrude.
Remarkable story, remarkable woman. Thank you so much for bringing her to our attention, Leonard Rogoff.
Thank you for having me.
Leonard Rogoff is author of Gertrude Wheel, Jewish Progressive in the New South, also a historian for the Jewish Heritage Foundation. And we have more information about his book at our website, stateofthings.org. Also, he's going to be reading from his new book April 25th in Goldsboro at the Wayne County Public Library's Gertrude Wheel Auditorium. You can find out about that at our website as well. Just ahead, why Peter Tchaikovsky, one of the most popular composers in history, had a side to his identity that you didn't know about. You'll find out about that on The State of Things. Please stay tuned.